97.3.
And now, live from beautiful downtown Bramley Road, in the very shadow of the Wine City Estate, it's Sandy Toksvig.
On today's show, the countdown to Christmas continues with old friend Al Karim. Sandy will be doing Miss World and Jenny Seagrove. So come join the party. Dilly, take it away.
Samuel and Sandy, beamers omnes. We've all been utterly balmy once. We've had the jolliest japes and been in several scrapes. And just for a lark, we meet in the park to pelt each other with grapes. So sing it in Latin if you're clever, or sing it in English if you are a dunce. Samuel and Sandy, beamers omnes. Yes, we've all been balmy once.
People, and we're joined by the, well, breathtakingly lovely Alcrim Giovanni.
Hi, now, Sandy.
Alcrim spent 9 hours at his office Christmas lunch yesterday. That's all
and
I'm
it
saying.
Shows.
No, you don't look pale.
Thank you, Sandy. But this is impossible for me to look pale. That's quite an achievement on your part in terms of description. And I thought you were so good at describing things. You're just being very tactful, really,
taking
aren't
the mic,
you?
Actually. I had to leave our Christmas lunch after only a single course and a glass of water yesterday because I was giving my all at St. Paul's Cathedral last night. And it was extraordinary. It was an extraordinary event because we did a nativity play.
Mm.
I was Mary and Bernard Cribbins was Joseph.
Wow.
And James,
that's a combination.
James Fleet, who plays the sort of dim-witted son in The Vicar of Dibley.
Oh, yes.
He was the Archangel Gabriel. It was altogether a very curious evening, I have to say.
I wish I'd been there.
Yeah. What was fascinating about it was we were taken to tea. We went to did a bit of a rehearse because it's very difficult to get the sound right in St. Paul's because there's a tremendous echo. It's even more difficult than the Royal Albert Hall to get
it. Whispering gallery.
Yeah, and there's a lot of kind of God said. And if you do anything remotely funny, it's like a Mexican wave of laughter because the back row gets it 5 years later than the front row. Hence the differences in church calendars, I think, is all to do with the sound travelling through the church. So we were taken to tea after the rehearsal at the vicar's house, which I have to say was lovely digs.
I bet, around the corner. In fact, I've seen it. It's right opposite the 18th century house. I was there only 2 weeks ago, actually. Lovely house.
What are you doing, hanging around?
No, I was on my way to the Tate Modern, and I went past it, looked at the building, and thought, this is a really interesting building, because it actually covers the whole of that frontage, doesn't it?
Well, and what was extraordinary was, because there were 3,000 people trying to get into the church service, instead of us going back in through the front door and so on, there's a secret door, and I don't think I'd ever find it again, that led us underground to, as it were, the backstage area of St. Paul's. And we went down through all the bit where they keep all the kind of surplus chairs and indeed probably the surplus. And suddenly I'm walking along and I look up and I'm walking past Nelson's tomb.
Wow.
We'd gone in through this sort of underground passage and down through all of it and then up through the crypt, which had been laid out for dinner, and then up kind of behind the altar and up into the church. It was extraordinary.
Sandy Toksvig goes up the passage of the Vicar of
St.
Paul's.
Yes, it was very like the Von Trapps, you know, very like the Von Trapp family escaping from the Nazis into the arms of St. Paul's.
Were you singing?
I did do. It was great. There was 80 people in the orchestra and a huge choir. I mean, you can't not
That's
sing.
That's fast. You 80 can't people not in sing. The orchestra.
Slightly difficult, I have to say, because I was in the brass section. My voice not quite up to the trombone. Anyway, in a moment, we're going to be opening our Advent door, and I need your advice about cards that I wish to hand out on public transportation.
Have you been injured while driving, walking, working, shopping, or even playing? If you weren't to blame, you could be entitled to compensation. But don't trust your case to expensive, non-qualified claims handlers. BGR Bloomer offers a totally free service to all their clients. They fight to get maximum compensation for you, and it won't ever cost you a penny. Call BGR Bloomer for free, anytime, on 08000 50 10 55. Call now, 08000 50 10 55.
Sandy Toksvig.
Today, Sandy's joined by
Alcrim Giovanni.
What you need is a good bodyguard.
What I need is a good body. The one I've got isn't white guarding.
Holly and the Irish. To say it was rather better last night. Now then, I can tell you that there has been a cathedral dedicated to St. Paul overlooking the City of London since the year 604.
604? That's very
amazing.
Early,
isn't it? Astonishing. Of course, it did rather falter during the Great Fire of London.
Just a little bit.
And was then reinvented by old Chrissy Wren.
There's something very curious about the facade of St. Paul's. Now, I don't even notice. You know, there's two spires on either side of it. And at the top of the spire, there's these little roundels. One of them has got a clock and the other one is empty. And it's very, very curious because 18th century buildings always completely symmetrical. Wren obviously had some kind of vision for this. And if he had a vision, then he wouldn't have put the clock on one spire and not on the other.
Well, here's a bit of luck. Next week, the Reverend Laura Burgess, who is Reverend at St. Paul's, is coming in to talk to us about the preparations for Christmas that they make at St. Paul's. And perhaps she can explain that to us. I have to say, it was a wonderful and astonishing occasion to take part in. Now then, we wish to share Christmas with you. Whether you are a Christmas celebrator or not, it's a festival. It's the same as I take Diwali to my own. I take anything that's jolly and light-filled. So what we're going to do is we're going to open our Advent calendar for today. Behind it is the voice of someone who has appeared as a guest on the programme. First person to guess who it is will win a Christmas cache of goodies. Listen to this.
He is starting out again in a loft apartment in a place called Rat Wharf, which is alongside the Grand Union Canal in Leicester.
So there we are. Who was that person? It was a guest on our programme. Give us a call, 0870 9090973. We would like to send you a gift of some kind or other. Darling Sandy, this is from Julia. Please, could you put a shout out? Whoa! For a concert tomorrow night, Saturday. The Camden Singers with Finchley Children's Music Group and the Enfield String Players will be performing a Britain's exhilarating St. Nicholas with other music and family carols. All the usual festive refreshments and a truly joyous and jolly occasion, 7:30 p.m. at St. Michael's Church, Camden Road, right next to Sainsbury's. You see, and I think
that's down the corner from me.
Well, then you could pop over.
I will, certainly.
See, I love things like that. It is just, I mean, there is something astonishing. I mean, for example, last night, I mean, I know it was a whole sort of symphony orchestra and choir and everything, but something astonishing about 3,000 people's voices raised in song.
Absolutely. It's that collective feeling that you rarely get these days, don't you? I remember going to St. Albans Cathedral for Midnight Mass one year, because my brother lives in St. Albans. And what was extraordinary was that there was my father, myself, my partner, my brother, and my brother's wife at the time, the only two Christians there, nominal Christians, were my brother's wife and her mother, and they were the worst behaved of the whole
lot. Oh, really?
Yes, it's us heathens who were singing the hymns.
And being terribly respectful.
They were nudging each other and giggling. I thought it was outrageous. Now, there is something when you listen, raise your voice.
And stand up to sing so that your diaphragm's kind of full and ready to go, and I love it. Now, I need your advice. I don't take a lot of public transportation, and the reason I don't is because I'm quite claustrophobic. And so it has nothing to do with anything except that I'm not very good in kind of crowded spaces, and I think it's because I am very, very short. So it's more difficult.
You feel very enclosed.
I do feel awful. But anyway, I do sometimes take the tube into work because the particular tube line that I have to take is entirely overground, and therefore I don't feel quite so stressed. I can look out and see what's going on. So there's a young woman sitting next to me this morning on the tube. And she was maybe in her early 20s, and she was sniffing continuously and loudly. And I thought, that must be awful for her, because it was not comfortable.
Do you think she didn't have a tissue?
I turned to her and I said, would you care for a tissue? Because being a mother of three, I always have a linen handkerchief for big emergencies, for the cut head. Or
did you wrap it round her nose and say, now blow?
Well, she was furious with me.
Was she?
Furious with me, and got off in a great huff. And then, so, I was just trying to mind my own business, and then there was a young man on the other side who was listening to music on one of these iPod things.
Leaky headphones.
But it was so loud, darling, that I was concerned for him. I was worried about him. I just thought, you're going to be deaf before you are in your 30s. You're going to be completely deaf.
Which is actually true. A friend of mine works in a hospital, and her colleagues in the ear, nose and throat department say that as a result of Walkmans and iPods, young people's hearing is actually deteriorating fast.
And can you imagine that you couldn't hear, for example, the differences in the violin notes in a Mendelssohn concerto? I mean, how appalling, you know, later on when you begin to appreciate these rather better pieces of music, that you couldn't then appreciate it. So then I thought, well, I can't speak to him because I've already had a bit of a rebuff with the tissue thing. I wonder if I get a little card printed, a little calling card that said, you do realise you're damaging your hearing, or you're interfering with my pacemaker or something to just make him turn it down. And then it occurred to me that you could have a series of cards about your person.
You could.
Just hand out. Things that just say, sorry to trouble you, but your fly's open. You haven't had to actually communicate with the person. And I think if you handed a card to somebody, they would take it.
They would think it was something rather interesting. We could do it along the principle of that old Hofnung thing. Do you remember our advice to tourists in London? So you can hand them a card to people who are obviously foreign, saying, in England, on entering a railway carriage, it is customary to shake every passenger by the hand. Have you tried the famous echo in the British Museum?
Yes, that might be less helpful. Do you like this idea? I think it's rather a fine idea. I think I'm going to have a series of cards printed that just say things like... did you really think through what you're wearing today?
I would like to hand a card to them. You know when people are carrying those rucksacks?
Yeah.
They don't realise that their backs extend two feet behind
them. Yes, they had become tortoise-like.
And they whirl around. Mm. So you'd hand them a card saying, please remember, your back extends 2 feet behind you.
Right, well, what we're going to do is we're going to take suggestions for these tube cards. I think this is a marvellous way forward. It's very British. You don't actually have to speak to the person. You don't even have to actually touch them, because your finger will be one end of the card and theirs will be the other end. It's very, very British, this. And I think we could also have some maybe for restaurants, when the person, you clearly haven't eaten your meal and the waiter says, was everything okay? And it was just ghastly. What you normally say is, I wasn't very hungry. Right? No, it'll say, this meal was execrable. And I will never be coming here again. But you don't have to actually say it. You just hand the card over. So suggestions, please, for tube cards. In fact, general cards to hand out in public places. To Sandy, spelled with an I, at lbc.co.uk. And the person who comes up with the very best suggestion will receive some kind of lovely gift from us. I haven't decided what yet.
This is like that principle that Victoria Wood had. When you have something nice to say to somebody, I never say it behind their back. I just pop it on a postcard.
Yes, see? It's that. Yes. It's like kind of... It's cheap texting. We're going to go to the travel now, and we're going to come up with questions for Miss Wild, who's coming in for lunch. But first, here's Simon Bennett with the travel.
Thanks, Andy. All going off at the Blackwall Tunnel this afternoon. Anti-clockwise. Now, they closed the left-hand tunnel to repair it. Some of the tiles were coming loose on the roof. We've now got reports of an accident in the Westmoor, so I'm guessing that they opened it and someone had an accident within. We'll keep an eye on that for you. Obviously, if you're at the front of those queues and you know more, then please give us a call 08000 6080, but it's causing no end of delays right back to junction 3 of the M20. So big hassles for you trying to get into Essex from Kent this afternoon. Bear that in mind if you're either leaving Bluewater or trying to get to Lakeside. We'll keep you updated as best we can. Now moving on to the A2 in Gravesend, coastbound accident reported at the tollgate services. Forest Gate, and new reports of an accident on the A118 Romford Road around Upton Lane. At Caterham Bypass, the A22, I can tell you, has fully reopened southbound at Caterham towards the M25 at junction 6. We've got a broken down vehicle though on Peckham High Street heading westbound at Rye Lane. And in Wimbledon, the A298 Bushy Road shut both ways following an accident between Martin Way and Grand Drive. Now to the west of town in Hayes, we've got a lane blocked with an accident on the A312 North Hyde Road. It's going northbound at the Balls Bridge roundabout. Public transport, quite a bit going on. You have delays on the following lines: the Metropolitan line for the Overland, it's Thames Lincoln 1, and Wagon reporting a no service between Ali Pally and Harford North. They've got some track problems. Your next update, though, in half an hour. LBC 97.3 Travel with Confused.com. When it comes to car insurance, we'll do the legwork for you.
Some business people think that the more complicated they make things, the smarter they look. But complicated isn't smart. It just costs more. At MaxJet, they understand this. For them, having a complicated jumble of fares is not good business. That's why they only fly business class to New York. For reservations, visit maxjet.com. MaxJet. It's just good business.
Fly MaxJet. Stansted to JFK. Fares from only £854 return, inclusive.
Sandy talks me.
Today, Sandy's joined by Alkarim Javani.
I don't believe it. You're shaving your chest now?
I didn't have time to wax.
Well, if it be ladies to know that today I'm wearing a bikini and Alcum Giovanni's in a thong, and that is because we are parading now in the bathing section of Miss World. That was the music from the 1970s Miss World contest, and at 1 o'clock this year's Miss World 2005 is coming in to have lunch with us.
Will she be wearing a national costume, or will she be wearing evening dress, or will she match us and be casual?
Casual in the bathing. I must say, you are looking pretty...
Oh, thanks, Andy.
Yeah, no man breasts on you. Now then, we've had suggestions in for cards to hand out, you know, on the tube. If there's something you want to say to a fellow passenger, but you don't really want to engage them in conversation, or you think they're going to be a bit iffy about it, just hand out a little card. Liam in Broccoli not quite got the idea. His just says, can you lend me a fiver? See, that wasn't... It was more advice, Liam, than personal gain. What you want to do is put your sort code and account number in the back of Private Eye. You'd be sorted in no time.
Does that actually work?
I haven't the faintest idea. We did try the other day to read some of them out and see if anybody was willing to donate, but nothing happened, I'm afraid. Robert Oddy in Beddington has got much more of the idea. He suggests, I am reliably informed that soap is now available in a variety of perfumes, colours and prices. Please avail yourself of this most wondrous of products. for the whiffy people. The whiffy people on the tube.
You'd have to do that just before the doors open so you could leap out before they hit you.
Yeah, that way. Yeah. Well, you could have a second card that says, I also give black belt instruction in Kung Fu as a sort of backup, which I quite like.
Or you could hand it to them in an envelope saying not to be open till I'm out of the carriage.
Yeah. Remember that old gag when the cash machines first came out? Of the burglar turning up with the full thing on, you know, he's got the bag with swag and the black and white shirt and the mask and everything, and he took a card out of his wallet and just had a picture of a gun on it, put it in the ATM.
This is a hold-up.
I quite like that. I think that's a very good idea. So, suggestions, please, for cards that you could hand out in public to people that you don't particularly want to speak to. I think it's the way forward. Now, you brought in a book called Can Reindeer Fly? And I want to know if it's true, can they?
I'm afraid they can't, unless you put a rocket on their backs and launch them, which is what the illustration on the cover of this book is.
Yeah, but Santa's reindeers are magic.
They are.
That's the bit you're leaving out.
That's the bit I'm leaving out.
Exactly. So what is the book, Jenna?
They're very special reindeer, Santa's reindeer. Yeah. Most reindeer can't fly. Well, it's subtitled The Science of Christmas, and it's written by a chap called Roger Highfield. I first came across this about 4 or 5 years ago, because somebody put it in my stocking at Christmas, and read it during the course of Christmas Day and Boxing Day. And it's exactly my kind of book, because the great thing about it is a proper scientific analysis of Christmassy things. But it's written with great elan and aplomb. It says it's been revised and updated, although, to be honest, I can't see it. Any revisions and updates on that. But it doesn't matter because it's actually quite a good fun book. And the great thing about it is it's proper and scholarly. You know, it's got a bibliography and it's got a glossary and everything. But at the same time, it's got this really kind of sort of bizarre sense of humour. So in the glossary explains the chaos theory to you and the whole thing about the butterfly effect. And it adds, it's also a term often used to describe preparations for Christmas.
Oh, that's sweet. See, I like that.
But what they also do is he actually looks at some of the Christmas myths and analyses and works out why they might have been so. So for instance, the whole question about Jesus being born in a stable, where it turns out that the mastaba, which is the Middle Eastern word in Lebanon and Palestine for stable, is also the word used for when animals are kept within the house, because, of course, it provided warmth.
Well, it's much more likely that he was born in a cave than he was born in anything remotely wooden.
Yes, and it's like to be a stone house, which was lived in by the family, where the animals slept in the same room as the human beings, and therefore it's quite likely that it wasn't a stable separate. And the whole thing about there being no room at the inn, apparently the word for inn is also the same word for guest room. Either would have had a separate room for putting guests up, and if the separate room was full, then they would have to put Mary and Joseph in with the rest of the family. He also looks at the gifts, you know, gold, frankincense, and myrrh, and turns out that myrrh has a mild anesthetic effect, and the reason you bring it is because the woman has just given birth to a child. And anesthetic
might
be quite useful. Yes, drugs, give me drugs.
The old myrrh epidural.
But I'm not a great Christmas fan, and I tend to come out in hives, and he explains that phenomenon as well. Apparently, there is a substance called terpene, which is an oil that is found in the sap of Christmas trees and wreaths. And for some people who are allergic to it, it literally just does bring them out in hives. So if you want something solid, some solid reading, which has also got some fun on it over Christmas, I would highly recommend this one.
Can Reindeer Fly? It's by...
Roger Highfield, and it's subtitled The Science of Christmas.
I like things like that. But I have not liked, and I've really tried, I have really, really... This time, with a reality television programme, I really gave it a good go, which was Space Cadets.
Mm.
I quite liked the slogan, May the Fast Be With You. I thought that was funny. And then it turned out that was as funny, in fact, as it got. And it has been... just breathtakingly bad. None of the people in it are distinguishable one from the other because they are all on the same level of profound stupidity.
And that's a curious thing. I mean, a lot of this thing, the problem with the real key issue with reality television is the casting. I mean, I know that reality television is a dirty phrase for you, but if you think about I'm a Celebrity, the reason why it worked was the casting was perfect. With Space Cadets, they had to get particularly stupid people, because if they got people who had two brain cells rubbed together for whom both synapses could fire at the same time, they would have realised you can't go into space without having zero gravity.
Yeah,
they would have realised if you go into space, you experience G-force, and they weren't experiencing G-force. So if you have particularly dim people, what you end up with is a particularly dim programme. I mean, I was watching some of the live feed yesterday, and nothing happens. I mean, there isn't even any spacecraft noise for it to be convincing. It's just it's the kind of idea that people come up with sitting around a table at the pub. And it's really Channel 4's fault for having commissioned it. What's really interesting is that Peter Bazalgette, who's the head of Endemol, which made the programme, said when it was first proposed to him that he didn't think Channel 4 would buy it. And if Channel 4 did buy it, he would eat his hat. And Peter Bazalgette's original view was clearly
unbelievable.
The right
one. Been breathtaking, I have to say. Dearest Sandy, I send you warm greetings this Christmas tide. Kevin from Catford here. Hello, Kevin. I would love to print a card which I would hand out to anyone who stood too close to me in a crowded tube carriage, and it would read, I would like to sincerely apologise in advance for my uncontrollable bouts of severe flatulence. One imagines there would be a substantial buffer zone in my vicinity. Best wishes, Kevin in Catford. That's a very good one. We like that one. So cards you would hand out in public to people that you don't know, but you feel you just need to have a word. Tim's a bit worried you may have split an infinitive. It's very like
when?
Star Trek, to boldly go. That's all. See, that's a worry. To sincerely apologise. To apologise sincerely. Do you see? There's a split infinitive. But nevertheless, we like that. And Kevin's in the running. Whoever sends us the best suggestion for a card you would like to hand out in public, for example, or you might, for example, if there's an empty seat next to you and a person approaches, you might have a card that says, please come and sit with me and the Lord. And I think that would probably vacate that seat. I'm just guessing. As far as our advent calendar is concerned, Stacey in Northwood guessed correctly. It was the lovely Sue Townsend who was talking there. And so Stacey will be receiving a gift of some kind. Now, at 1 o'clock, we're very excited. Miss World 2005 is coming in to share our Dickensian Christmas lunch that we're having today.
Has she been around the world to help people and look after animals yet?
This is. We just thought we'd get some of these things out of our system before she arrives. Now, I've...
What is it, Sandy? You've got brighter red.
I've had a look through what the previous Miss Worlds have done with their life. And apart from Miss Guam, who was Miss World in 1980, who's currently a special constable in London, which is terribly pleasing.
That is impressive.
Either we have no idea what happened to them. You get a list. So, for example, the winner of the very first Miss World, 1951, Kiki Håkansson of Sweden. No information available. If anybody knows if she's like a traffic warden someplace, you know, along with Miss Guam.
Sandy, if you'd had such a terrible scandal in your past, you'd want to expunge it as well, wouldn't you?
What? That I was
winning Miss World?
It's...
In fact, you probably were. You're just trying to hide the fact, aren't you?
I've kept it very quiet. One of my favourites, May Louise Flodin, also of Sweden, Miss World 1952. Sweden was well in there the first couple of years.
Yeah.
This is what's happened to her since. May Louise has balanced life on the catwalk with a life on water skis, performing with her husband in public shows. What is that as a life? She now runs a hotel in Jordan, which I'm very, very pleased with. There are lots that we have no idea what happened to them. Quite a lot now run interior design companies. And then there's a big gap. Does anybody know what happened to Rosemary Franklin from the UK? She was Miss World in 1961. Mm.
I once met a Miss World in Dar es Salaam. She was the first Miss India to become Miss World.
Oh,
her
right.
name was Rita Farial. And I think I must have met her in the mid-60s, 65, 66, because my dad used to be in a branch of showbiz, used to be in the film industry, and she was doing personal appearances. And I think she turned out to be rather well. She went back to India and she became a doctor, because she was a medical student at the time. So some of them do actually produce something decent off their careers.
Lay off the garlic. A suggestion for a card from Christina in Romford.
All your critical information is on your office PC. How do you work from home or while travelling? You probably copy everything to disk, email files to yourself, or sync up your laptop. What a hassle. There's a better way. Go to MyPC, the easy and secure way to access your PC from anywhere, all over the internet. Log on to gotomypc.co.uk and your desktop instantly appears, just as if you were sitting in front of it. Work with all your programs and files, check email, and utilize any network resource. All you need is internet access. With GoToMyPC, anything you can do at your office PC, you can do from anywhere. No wonder GoToMyPC won a 2005 world-class award for remote access from US magazine PC World. And now you can try it free for 30 days. Visit gotomypc.co.uk, click the radio listener button and use promo code LBC97.3. That's gotomypc.co.uk, radio listener button, promo code LBC97.3. Try Go To My PC free today. Terms and conditions apply.
Sandy talks me.
We're looking for little cards you could print up to hand out in public if you don't want to speak to somebody but you feel you've something to say. And Christina in Romford has also just suggested a card that says, "You have egg on your tie." See, I like that. I think they should be nicely printed. Steve Campen has just said it's not egg. I try and raise the tone on this program.
Tie, not thigh, Steve.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Available on DAB Digital Radio.
London's LBC 97.3.
It's 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Helena Wilkinson. It's what the neutrals wanted, but London's clubs dreaded. Arsenal have been drawn to face Real Madrid for the first time in the first knockout stage of the Champions League, while Chelsea come up against Spanish champions Barcelona. A plumber has appeared in court via video link, charged with terrorism and firearms offences. 28-year-old Kazi Rahman from Newham has been remanded in custody until early next year. An actor who starred in the film Passenger 57 has been cautioned for using threatening behaviour on a flight from Los Angeles to Heathrow. Bruce Payne, who played the role of a hijacker in the movie, was arrested at Heathrow Airport for allegedly using threatening behaviour on a Virgin Atlantic flight. Around 1,000 workers building the new Terminal 5 at Heathrow are on strike today. Hundreds of construction staff are campaigning for a £1 an hour rise in their bonus pay. And the weather, it should brighten up later this afternoon. There is a chance of some rain around. Highs, not too bad, feeling quite mild, 12 degrees Celsius, but it will get colder this evening, down to 0 degrees Celsius. It's 12:31.
London. LBC 97.3.
Real life.
Real London.
Which premium vodka is filtered through charcoal, made from birches grown deep in Eastern Europe? Clearly, Smirnoff. Available at Threshers. Makes a good time great.
Try this. Find a really small chair, sit in it for 6 hours, then go to an important meeting. That's what it can be like flying economy to New York. And that's why MaxJet is introducing an affordable all-business class airline. You get a sumptuous leather seat and incredible four-course meals. For reservations, visit maxjet.com. MaxJet. It's just good business.
Fly MaxJet. Stansted to JFK. Fares from only £854 return, inclusive.
Sandy Toksvig.
Today, Sandy's joined by Alkarim Giovanni.
But look, darling, how did he die?
Mortimer, don't be so inquisitive. The gentleman died because he drank some wine with poison in it.
Well, how did the poison get in the wine?
Well, we put it in wine because it's less noticeable. When it's in tea, it has a distinct odor.
A piece there from Arsenic and Old Lace with Cary Grant, actually, showing what a brilliant sense of comic timing he had. Just terrific. If you've never seen it, do have a look. Though I have to warn the younger listener that it is in black and white. can disturb. I was trying to show my son some old black and white films the other day. He said, well, Mum, we can't watch it. There's something wrong with the telly. Sad.
Does he write books with black and white illustrations?
Yes, I suppose. I should say to him, you it's just say, the same.
Exactly, it's exactly the same thing. I mean, what's interesting is that, Sandy Arsenic and Old Lace is on over Christmas. So if people
haven't
seen it, they can watch it on terrestrial television. I think it's on BBC Two between Christmas and New Year. And it's very different from the remake that the Coen brothers made, which I thought was terrible. It was just full of fart jokes.
Well, also, don't remake these things. They were good enough in the beginning. So, and I had a letter somewhere from somebody. Timothy, I had an email saying that Julie Andrews is on this afternoon, but... It's in the extras. I'll never find it. But anyway, we'll find it on this in just a moment. Somebody is suggesting to me that Julie Andrews is on in something or other on Channel 5 this afternoon. I'll check it out. Now then, Alan Brooke and David Brandon are here. Alan teaches history at Peterborough Regional College, and David is a lecturer in social history and is the author of Stand and Deliver, A History of Highway Robbery. And I have a funny feeling we've done that book. No. Perhaps I've read it. That may be the thing. Who knows? Now, if you were seeking out entertainment in, say, the, 15th, 16th century, and you hadn't got any money, you might think, I know, we'll pop up to Tyburn and have a quick look at the place where they do the public hanging. And in fact, if you drive from Notting Hill, where we are today, up towards Marble Arch, you go past the sign for where the Tyburn hangings took place, which I think, David... It's on a convent wall now, is that right?
It's on a convent wall just at the north end of Hyde Park, just past the junction with Edgware Road.
I mean, how bizarre to have had a place of such notorious public hangings. How many people are we talking about that were hanged there?
We're talking, nobody knows for sure, but we're talking of probably at least 50,000.
So 50,000 people where there's now a convent. Was there always a place as well of religious instruction as well as the hanging?
I'm not sure about that. That's the convent is certainly there because it's if you like, a memorial to the Catholic martyrs who died there and at Smithfield.
So, Alan, what happened? Was there originally just a tree? Or, I mean, it was known as the Tyburn Tree. Was there actually a tree where people were hanged, or was there always a proper official gallows?
The early history tends to be a little bit vague. We suggest that Tyburn's history starts from the late 12th century.
Right.
It was a gallows until it became a fixed gallows around about 1570s. And then the famous triple tree was erected of about 15 to 18 foot high, three beams, which would hang eight people per beam, so it could take up to 24 people.
You'd have to be very cross to hang that many all in one go, wouldn't you?
That's like efficiency in killing, isn't it? Yeah. Something quite chilling and macabre about it.
It's got a battery killing, isn't it?
Well, the famous triple tree stayed there till about the 1750s, then they had a movable gallows, and then executions finished at Tyburn in 1783. And were moved to Newgate.
So, and were there entertainments? Is it true what we think about them, that people turned up because they were considered public spectacles?
Absolutely. Well, as far as the authorities were concerned, these were a warning not to sin. These were the wages of sin, being hanged in public. But in fact, the London mob took this over and in a sense turned it on its head and made a burlesque of it. It was a day for revelry. And there were people actually thieving off each other in the crowds, and there were people being hanged for pickpocketing while there were pickpockets at work in the crowd.
The short circuit the process goes straight.
Well, and also, I mean, if you think about the wonderful engravings of Hogarth in sort of the 18th century, I mean, he makes it pretty clear, doesn't he, Alan, that people are I don't know, making money out of it, selling oranges. Oh, really? And
large crowd assembles. It's a great place for commercial activity. There are people selling all sorts of wares. There's the last dying speeches of the condemned on sale.
And on sale, so they're pre-written and...
Yes, they were pre-written, yes.
Days before sometimes.
And that's right. Yeah, yeah. The prison chaplain would more likely than not write these on behalf of the condemned. But no, there was even warnings not to enter the crowd for fear of being crushed. Such were the large numbers, which went into thousands and thousands.
So like, and I think that reality shows, really, watching people suffer.
Yeah.
Well, I think it was that as much as anything which contributed to the decline. I think there was a concern about the effects that it was having, or the lack of effect, I would say, that it was having on the crowd, who were just turning it into something of a carnival.
and therefore not perhaps getting the message that was wanted.
Oh, yes, you see this quite often.
David, there's a couple of tell me whether these are true or not, that I've always understood that the expression one for the road and the expression on the wagon were related to the hangings at Tyburn. Have you come across that at all?
No, I haven't actually, no.
I understood that the wagon that brought you to Tyburn actually started one end of what we now consider to be Oxford Street. And so that there would the hangman would stop and have one for the road, which was the road down to Tyburn, and everybody else who was about to be hanged didn't have one, and they were on the wagon. Does that make any sense to you?
Well,
at all?
The processions actually came from Newgate and the Old Bailey, and obviously went down what is now Oxford Street. And there is there are stories that they sometimes took 3 hours for a 3 mile journey, and that they stopped off at a number of hostelries on the way, including the condemned felons.
You'd want to, really, wouldn't you?
Well, maybe this is an element of humanity, actually.
Yeah.
Some of them were insensible by the time they got there and didn't realise what an awful event they were going to be a part of.
And are we talking about boys, girls, both? Yeah. They weren't sort of distinguishing between men and women in terms of who they were going to...
No.
I mean, it just seems sort of breathtaking now, doesn't it?
It does.
There is, and I mean... What I find more breathtaking is the public reaction to it, and I suspect the public reaction was not a kind of two fingers to the authorities. You want us to be cowed by this, and you're not going to. I think there's something really fundamental in human nature, which is base and beastly, and we like to see other people suffer. And I find that more macabre and strange and chilling. And I suspect that hasn't gone away. I mean, human nature doesn't change over the centuries, does it?
No.
There is an extraordinary, some wonderful drawings and engravings in here. This woman, Elizabeth Brownrigg, if we were to pick out a woman, who sounds just appalling person.
Well, she bullied, victimised a succession of young servant girls, really, and starved them and mistreated them and what we now say abused them. And she was an example of the hatred of the crowd, that sometimes when the person going to be hanged was a hero, perhaps a highwayman, for example, he would ride in the wagon, and people would throw flowers at him and cheer him on his way, and he'd laugh and quip with the crowd. She got stones thrown at her, brickbats, excrement, and was booed and hissed all the way.
It's interesting, though, because you sort of don't think in that period of time that it would have happened that somebody who had mistreated a servant would be brought to brook for it. I mean, it just seems unlikely, doesn't it, that the justice system would have reached that far? I always associate the Tyburn with very poor people being...
Predominantly poor.
I mean, she was actually shocked because the neighbours just had a bellyful of it.
Right, oh, OK, so she got her comeuppance.
Yeah.
Apart from taking the wagon, as it were, down the road, you also have some illustrations of somebody who's actually being dragged all the way. Which was the more common?
Well, the wagon was more common later, and certain types of criminal were dragged on a hurdle, which must have been a pretty painful process along the dusty or stony roads, and they were sort of dragged to just above the surface of the road, so they would bump over all the bumps, and it would be, I think, extremely...
dead by the time they got to the gallows, yes.
I mean, they're amazing. And if you were very rich, would you go to Tyburn, or you would have some other better treatment?
Well, one or two wealthy people who went in their own coaches. And if there were a number of people being hanged on the same day, they would sometimes allow the lesser criminals, if you like, the lower social orders, to ride with them.
First time. Sharabang to your hanging.
It's like it has a school ride, but for the other end of your life, really, isn't it?
Well, you certainly see literary figures like Johnson and Boswell and Pepys going there, and Johnson laments the decline of Tyburn. He really, thinks it's quite sad that this particular event is lost.
The real reason that they stopped hanging there was there was so much development of high-class, high-quality social, high-quality housing in the area, Belgravia, that sort of area, Mayfair. They didn't want to be polluted by the riotous crowds.
Near my backyard.
Exactly. Yes. It was a piece of nimbyism in the 18th century.
Yes.
I don't mind people being hung. I just don't want to see them being hung outside my front door.
Yes.
And was there always sort of one person in charge? I mean, who were the figures that would attend? Would it be the executioner, and would there be a priest? I mean, who would be there?
Certainly the what was called the ordinary, the prison chaplain, would have attended to the condemned in the days before. They would have been instrumental in writing their speech. They would have accompanied them on the wagon to the scaffold. The executioner obviously would be there waiting, depending on who was being hanged and what type of execution it would be. There may have been others. Had it been a hanging, drawing and quartering, then obviously there was... more involved in that particular process and punishment.
And did that carry on, the sort of the addenda, the worst bit, the drawing and the quartering and the hanging people's heads on bridges, did that carry on right to the end, or does that kind of disappear a bit earlier?
I think you start to see that decline. I think the last decapitation is at Newgate in 1820, but there's certainly...
1820?
1820.
As late as that?
Cato Street conspirators, yes.
As late as that? Yeah. Wow.
But certainly the decapitations, hanging, drawing and quartering were in decline by the time Tyburn was coming to an end.
Well, apart from anything else, I think it's jolly difficult to fill that position. Who wants to do that? That's a horrible job.
Yes.
Bizarre.
There was never any shortage of people putting themselves
really?
Forward to be hanged. There were a lot of perks. They sold the clothes of the condemned prisoners, ripped them to shreds and sold them in the crowd. Pieces of the scaffold were believed to be good, for example, to rub on the gums, the teeth, to help toothache. And the touch of the condemned man, or the dead man, was reckoned to be a cure for many illnesses. So people used to rush forward and get their, especially for diseases of the skin, to get the dead man's hands to rub the skin.
Given that this was attached to the individual, did any kind of sort of mystical myth attach itself to the place? Because I think places absorb the emotions that have been felt in there, you know, that over years, you know, those things still linger on. I mean, did people feel that Tyburn was a place that they would want to avoid at night? Or what happened when the gallows
was removed? It must have been spooky.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, bearing in mind that where Tyburn was located would have been a rural countryside. What is now Oxford Street was Tyburn Road, and starts really to expand from about the mid-18th century, so it would have been open countryside. People would have loitered around there. In fact, there's a story, I think, in the later 17th century where someone actually removed the gallows and displaced them. But yes, I mean, I think there's all those associations with Tyburn as a place, although we're that much more removed from it now. People in those 600 years would have been more familiar with Tyburn as probably St Paul's, the Tower, London Bridge, or the traditional landmarks.
I mean, it's hard for us to imagine. You're talking about a time when Tottenham Court Road was pig farms. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of impossible for us to imagine what that would have been like. It is completely fascinating, and anybody who has any interest in London will absolutely love it. It's an astonishing picture of sort of crime and punishment in London. It's published by Sutton Publishing. It is by Alan Brook and David Brandon. It's called Tyburn, London's Fatal Tree, and we will put a link on our website. And all you have to do is click through on that and you can go straight to Amazon and purchase. Do you see how we try and look after our authors? Because authors are very, very important. Okay, thanking you. We go now to the travel and we come back with a bit of an actrine.
Back to the M25 then, anti-clockwise, slow from Junction 3 at the M20 into the Dartford Tunnel, with the left-hand bore still shut for, an accident that's being dealt with now. They were closing it for repair work to some of the tiles that came loose in the roof. Forest Gate and reports of a crash on the A118 Romford Road around Upton Lane, but a broken down vehicle as well on Peckham High Street, slowing westbound drivers down towards Rye Lane. Wimbledon now and the A298 Bushy Road closed in both directions after a crash between Martin Way and Grand Drive. Cyclist involved, so it may be closed for some time. And to the west of town, we got a lane blocked with an accident on the A312 North Hyde Road going northbound at the Ballsbridge roundabout. Tyburn Lane in Harrow on the Hill blocked in both directions at Peterborough Road after a crash. And in Herne Hill, Milkwood Road closed between Gubbion Road and Loudon Road, possibly a crash. I know it's a popular cut through route from Herne Hill to Brixton, so we've had this on the go since the early hours of this morning. If it is still closed this afternoon, reconsider an alternative route. Consider an alternative route because it will cause you some horrible delays. Metline hold-ups continue, and Wagon reporting no service Alexander Palace to Hartford North with those track problems. LBC 97.3 Travel, your next update in half an hour. With confused.com, when it comes to car insurance, we'll do the legwork for you.
Ooh, there's nothing more attractive than orange peel skin. Well, if you've got unwanted cellulite, that's something you don't hear very often.
Depilect brings you Endomology, an impermanent treatment for the appearance of cellulite.
And for a limited time, all Endomology treatments are reduced by 25% at Depilect's Beauty Clinic on Wigmore Street.
Call 020 7486 0852 for your free private consultation.
Unveil the real you at Depilect.
Sandy talks me.
Sandy talks me.
Today, Sandy is joined by Alkarim Giovanni.
Thank you.
Sorry, singing along. I sing Elvis this morning. Tim said it was enough to make you wish he'd leave the building. very good. The Surreal McCoy has sent in a lovely cartoon. I was talking about the fact that I was on the tube this morning, and just occasionally you wish you could just say something to your fellow passenger, but you're too British and you just don't dare. And this morning I did dare, and it was a mistake. And so I was suggesting that we have little cards printed that you just hand out to people. And Surreal McCoy's done a wonderful cartoon of a man with a full drum kit, the full kind of Ringo Starr drum kit, on the tube, and he's playing, and there's a commuter going, I say, would you mind awfully turning that down? Very, very good. So we need suggestions, please. The best suggestion will win some kind of a lovely prize. I haven't the faintest idea what it'll be. Mark in Munich suggests, Dear Sandy, my card for the busy tube would say, bags are quite happy to sit on the floor, you know. It's not uncommon for a standing pensioner on a train here, and that's in Germany, to show their ID to a seated young person. Have a lovely weekend. See, that'll be the reason for bringing in that ID card thing that I hadn't thought of.
Oh, the only reason why ID cards are good yeah. idea.
Get those young people off their asses on the tube. Now then, the lovely Sophie Shaw is here, and Sophie is currently appearing in A Man for All Seasons at the Theatre Royal in Haymarket. Very welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, what are you playing in it, darling? What part have you got?
I'm playing Thomas More's daughter.
Alice, isn't it?
Sorry?
Is it Alice she's called?
Margaret.
So very Margaret close. Moore. Very close. Close. Margaret.
Alice is the wife.
I knew there was.
Now,
a character.
See, it would get terribly confusing.
Yeah. Yeah. So you play the daughter.
Yes.
Now, just remind us of the story of Thomas More, because it's not a happy one, frankly.
Well, it's not a happy one. No, it doesn't end beautifully. He was asked to swear to the act of succession, mm-hmm. which, amongst other things, said that the King Henry VIII was the head of the church in England. And being a devout Catholic, it went against his principles.
He had one or two sleepless nights.
He had one or two sleepless nights and then one headless night.
Yeah, see? That's one way, though, of ridding yourself of your problems.
Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? You're not thinking about it now. Well, we don't know. As far as we know, he's not thinking about it now. So now, the weird thing about, not weird, but it's unusual, is that your dad is playing Thomas More.
That's right, yes.
So your dad, Martin Shaw,
yes.
You watch him have his head cut off every night for a living.
Yeah, it's not the best way to pass the time. I expect it's probably worse for him.
Yeah.
But no, yes, I do. Actually, sometimes I don't watch. Sometimes I discreetly bury my head.
You do serious acting?
Yes.
With a hanky and everything?
Yes, with my back to the audience. I'm not giggling, I'm actually in the moment.
See, now, this is one of the things that I find most difficult. I've mostly been in comedies, right? And making people laugh, it's, you know, it's got its own kind of joys and things. Whenever I've had to be in something very, very serious, it makes me cry with laughter.
Well,
are there moments, though? There must have been moments in rehearsal.
Oh, terribly, yeah. There are some, and there's one line, in fact, that we had to... that we did actually have to cut, where the dialogue is supposed to run. He's supposed to say to me, what does he say to me? Oh, you're very pensive. Mm. To which I'm supposed to reply, you're very gay.
Ah, yeah, see? See your dad?
You can't use that line.
I couldn't, because I ended up turning to him, you're very gay. And I was in stitches. Couldn't do it. Could never keep a straight face.
I think you changed it to you very jolly. I suppose it's not a term
we tried.
Used in the 16th century.
Exactly.
But also you'd have that in the back of your head.
I know,
you?
I know.
And then your dad would have to do jazz hands.
I know, and I'm and a terrible corpse, and it just, it's not good. There have been many, many unfortunate spoonerisms that have made me bite my lip very, very hard.
I think corpsing, which is the theatrical expression for laughing when you're not supposed to, is one of the most painful things in the world.
Oh, it can be awful.
I was in a Shakespeare and we had to sing at some funeral or other, Abide With Me, I can't remember what it was. I remember on one occasion of four actors, only one who was elderly and hadn't really heard what had made us all laugh. She was the only one still singing, and the rest of us, all you can hear is it's awful, isn't it? It's truly
it can
terrible.
Be terrible.
What do you think it is that causes it? Because when you watch those outtake TV programs, almost every single one is about ways of people corpsing. And do you think it's a nervous reaction?
It is. It's you know how inappropriate it is.
Yeah.
The very first funeral I ever went to was of a close relative, and I got out of the car, saw the coffin, and burst out laughing because it was so completely surreal.
I mean, there are just those moments. And also, what I find is I notice other things that I probably wouldn't have noticed at all. I, like you, went to a funeral and was talking to a very distressed relative. And meanwhile, it was out in the country. Meanwhile, a large stallion was doing his best to mount a mare in the field behind her shoulder.
Now, it's a cycle of life, birth, and sex, isn't
yes.
it?
Just, there you go.
And you don't want to go, oh, have a look at that.
Look at the size of that. Yeah.
And it was an astonishing sight. And I'm doing that head nodding thing and trying really hard to ignore this, but the woman wasn't very tall. I could see everything.
The thing to do is either bite your lip really, really hard or grow fingernails and dig them into your palm.
That works, does it?
It does, just about, yes.
It does have a Pavlovian effect where every time you dig your fingernails into your palm, you start laughing.
Well, sadly, I bite my fingernails, so actually that last one is no use
to me.
Not
so good for you. Now, growing up with your dad, who's a most wonderful actor and has been in lots of fabulous things, was there any choice? Did you sort of think, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to be an actor, oh, look at me, I'm an actor?
Well, for me, of course there was always a choice, but for me, I never wanted to do anything else, even from primary school. I guess it was in the air. My mum started out as an actress, and then she went into education, but I grew up knowing about theatre and knowing about actors and that world.
Does that mean you lived in a very dramatic household, people going, there's no milk? What do you mean there's no milk?
I think I was the most dramatic. Huge tantrums and was a very angry child.
Yeah.
We did plays at school and at primary school, and I loved it even from then, and I knew that was what I wanted to do, and I did sort of look at other things. You know, you go and see the career counsellor and they say, acting? Yes, but that's a hobby. But what do you really want to do?
Yeah.
So I sort of looked at social work briefly and being a vet, as most kids do, I think.
Well, in that sense, you've done all three, really, because it is kind of a social work thing, I think, being in the theatre, and you do work with some people who are as dumb as animals. So I think, Sophie, you've kind of covered all three. I think you're onto an absolute winner there. So where did you train? Did you go and do drama school?
I did. I went to LAMDA, the London Academy of Music and Dramatic Art, in Earls Court. I went there for 3 years.
Learned how to be a tree and faint.
Exactly. Learned how to act like a light bulb or something. No, it was better than that. I think it's like driving. You really learn to drive once you've passed your test.
Yeah.
So I really learned to act once I'd left drama school.
Well, we should find out more about the play in just 1 second.
In La France, we have the lucky, how you say, cockerel.
In the mountains of Austria, we beat a goat herd with a bratwurst. This is uber lucky, you know.
For luck, the Spanish make a kiss from their grandmother and then sacrifice a bull.
Portugal is like in Spain, but we kiss the bull and sacrifice the grandmother.
This Friday, the EuroMillions jackpot has rolled over into a massive £37 million. So wherever you're from, speak the language of luck. The National Lottery.
Think lucky.
Games, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 16 or over. Jackpot amount is an estimate.
London's LBC 97.3.
Sandy Toksvig.
Today, Sandy's joined by Alkarim Giovanni.
We are joined by the lovely Sophie Shaw, who is currently starring as Thomas More's daughter, Margaret.
Her mother is called Alice.
In A Man for All Seasons, the wonderful Robert Bolt play. What do modern audiences make of it? I mean, do they find it sort of old-fashioned or not?
No, actually, so far they've been really overwhelmed by it. I think it's just a great, great story.
It's great drama, isn't it?
Mm. It is. It's fantastic.
You've got kings and a church.
And betrayal and bloody scenes and there's an awful lot of humour in it as well. It's there's some great laugh lines. It's gone down extremely well. We've been sold out all throughout our tour, we're starting at the Haymarket next week, so we'll see.
Well, I'm absolutely delighted because, I mean, although I'm a great fan of the musical and I do love musicals, I do think the West End needs it. We need those.
Need some real drama too.
Yeah, proper plays and so on. I think that's terrific. Have you chosen your dressing room yet?
Well, I don't think I have the privilege.
I don't think you do either, darling. No. You're probably the one right up the top of the stairs.
Yes, I think I am.
Fantastically creaky stairs at the Haymarket.
But I have a wonderful, wonderful roommate, so I'm very happy about that.
Now, you're also, looking at the cast here, this makes me smile, you're also in it with Clive Carter.
Yeah. Yes.
And it is such a lovely business, the theatrical business. I don't know. I'm sure other businesses are the same. Perhaps the vet world is exactly like this.
Social work,
what do I know? when I very first started in the theatre, and there were still bits and pieces of rep, and I started at Nottingham Playhouse, Clive Carter and I were in Little Night Music together.
He said, yes.
With Imelda Staunton,
yes.
Playing the maid, and the lovely Hilary Tyndall, who was in The Brothers, now no longer with us anymore. And Clive was only pretty much doing musicals and the brilliant Basil Hoskins. Here's a really bizarre thing, right? I got a catalogue through from Christie's from our good friend Charles Miller, who sends me these things. And it had a series of things from the estate of Basil Hoskins. And I didn't know. I didn't know he died. And it's a very odd way to find out somebody that you've worked with. But Clive never. I thought he was a musical boy. What's he doing this serious business?
Well, I know he's taken to it like a duck to water. I'm sure it's not his first foray.
I'm sure.
This musical boy a euphemism for something else?
No, darling. No, definitely not. No.
Decidedly not.
Oh no, absolutely no. Quite clearly not. Have you done that? Have you done the I'm now the Mirrorball 2, 3, 4 kind of. Do you know what I mean?
I know what I mean. I'd love to. I love singing. I love musicals. But it's very difficult. I mean, as you've just said, when somebody does a lot of musicals, it's very difficult for them to then go into something else to be taken seriously. But Clive's fantastic in this show. He's absolutely. I mean, you know what a complete softy he is.
Yes, he is.
And he's playing a real horror of a man, and he's absolutely chilling. He has this sort of glacial stare, and it's extraordinary.
Isn't that one of the great things about show business? Because I just saw Sarah Lancashire being interviewed, who I think is a quintessentially fabulous British television actress, and she's just taken over as Adelaide in Guys and Dolls. And I just thought, what fun!
Yeah.
What fun in this business.
Absolutely.
That one minute you're watching your dad being beheaded, and the next minute you're going, 1, 2, 3, 4. You know, whatever it is, and you're off into the next thing.
Yeah, no, I know, it's lovely.
Actually, it's funny, because my friend Dilly Keane, who wrote the song that we have at the beginning of this show, she and I have been meaning to do it for ages, and we haven't had a chance. We always find the Three Sisters rather tiresome. Have you been in Three Sisters?
No, I'd love to.
Well, we've always found it rather tiresome. We always think it needs a tap number in the middle. To we're going to do the Three Sisters the musical, so if you're up for it.
I'm totally up for that. I think that sounds like a go-ahead idea.
Okay, fantastic. Meanwhile, I hope you enjoy your season in A Man for All Seasons at the Theatre Royal Haymarket. I presume it's a limited season that you're on.
We're booked until the end of March.
Well, crack along. If you've not seen it, it is a really, really wonderful play, and I'll bring my daughter. That's one of the things I must tick off on her list of dramas that she must see. Coming up, we're having a Dickensian Christmas lunch, and we are delighted and privileged to be joined by Miss World 2005. And later on, a friend of Sophie's dad, Jenny Seagrave, is popping in to see us as well.
Available on DAB Digital Radio.
London's LBC 97.3.
It's 1 o'clock. Good afternoon. I'm Helena Wilkinson. It's what London's top two football teams dreaded.
Chelsea will receive Barcelona.
Oh, FC Barcelona.
And Real Madrid will play against Arsenal.
Start at home against Arsenal.
Well, in the last 16 of the European Champions League, English champions Chelsea come up against Spanish champions Barcelona again. Arsenal have also got a tough draw. They'll play David Beckham's Real Madrid. Our voice of football, Kenny Sampson, can't believe it.
I believe they had never played Real Madrid before in Europe, but what a draw. I mean, Real Madrid are a very exciting side, as I say, and I think Arsenal are doing really well in the Champions League, so it is fascinating. What a hard one to call. I think it's when you get to this stage, you know you're going to play someone decent, and Real Madrid are that.
Nearly a quarter of us are now obese. The latest government health figures show the number of very overweight men in England has almost doubled over the past 10 years. The number of obese women has gone up by around a third, but more people are eating the daily fruit requirement. Health industry analyst Karen Jocelyn says it's all down to our daily routine.
Our lifestyles have changed, and I think that's what's contributing to obesity. We walk less, we exercise less, we're eating differently, we have a much higher fat, high salt, high sugar diet. And those are all things that are contributing to our poor health.
Airlines at Heathrow are having to ration their fuel after the Hemel Hempstead oil fire. The Bunsfield site supplied around a third of the airport's fuel. A Qantas flight to Sydney tonight will have to stop off at Stansted to fill up. It will add around an hour and a half to the journey. Tony Blair will present revised EU budget proposals to the summit in Brussels this afternoon after we're hearing that some progress has been made in negotiations. While the Prime Minister is expected to offer the 10 new EU countries more cash, he's holding out for a review of the Common Agricultural Policy, which hands France billions. Sky's political editor, Adam Bolton, says Germany's new leader has intervened.
It's clear that at her first summit as a
international leader, Chancellor Merkel, is playing a kind of brokering role between France and Britain. The question is, can those three countries form a common front?
A plumber from Newham has appeared in court via video link, charged with terrorism and firearms.